Next on the agenda is San Juan Island EMS Operations Report. Chief Kutzman.
Well, good afternoon, Commissioners. Pam, thank you for those kind words about this smooth transition. It reminds me of when I first was in EMT class, we used the duck analogy. On the surface of the water, it looks very smooth. Underneath your paddling might help. So that preface, just to preface everything with that. The other thing I'd like to do is let you know that as I prepared my report, I kind of followed the template of my predecessor. If that is something you guys are comfortable with and that you you find useful and beneficial, wonderful. I'll continue to do that. If you want anything changed, information added, reduced, please let me know, and I'd be happy to accommodate you as best I can. So basically, to start out with, I'll give you some statistics for our department. We had 89 calls for the month of March, which brings our year-to-date to 251 calls. That's January through March 31st, 251 calls. We're 18 calls ahead of last year, which is basically an 8% increase. The average number of EMTs responding per call has dropped a little bit. We're down to 1.97 people per call. I think we're up about 2.5 the previous month. Island Air transports, there were 19 Airlift Northwest transports, 12. We did not engage the Navy or the Coast Guard in the month of March. Our response times are still within rural benchmarks, and as I discuss a little further down in the report, I'm working on trying to build some metrics where we can not only look at response times overall, but try to break that down into in-town, out-of-town response times. I'm also trying to work with our software people to help us develop, there's a couple of other metrics, one called a shoot time, which is from time of page to time wheels roll, whether that's the paramedic or the ambulance. Right now, we tend to grab the paramedic's response because that is resources en route, but I'd like to also break out when the ambulance actually rolls. And so we're working on trying to develop those metrics and then also coming into response times, which means from the time the page goes out to when the services actually arrive at the scene. So we're working on those kinds of things, and hopefully I'll have a little more detailed metrics for you next week. The other thing I wanted to report on is to let you all know that the committees are all operational and they're working smoothly. We're continuing to work on our annual goals and make sure that our quality continues to improve. I have some financial information, just kind of an overall here, where our revenue to for this month was $208,291, brings our year-to-date $478,317, which is 21% of our budget projections. And again, for comparison, we're 25% into the year, so we're a little under there. Our expenses are $227,960. Year-to-date, $643,789, which is 27% of our budget projections. Cash and reserves are at $885,962, which is about 4.5 months of projected expenses. I can also let you know that the GEMT money, or the Ground Emergency Medical Transport money reimbursement program, we've received $22,668. Year-to-date, $58,997, which is 147% of what we had projected. And for more detailed information, I'd like to pass that over to our CPA, Chris Compton.
Carl covered most of the big stuff. You know, we're sitting at our revenue has just been really strong this year because of the GEMT money coming in and the extra ACH money that's come in, and that's helped us to, you know, usually this first quarter of the year, it's just like we just eat through cash like crazy because there's a lot of expenses at the beginning of the year, and we don't have a whole lot of revenue trick coming in because the property tax receipts haven't come in and things like that. And we've pretty much sat at about 4.5 months of cash for the whole first quarter of the year. So that's been great. There is a there's your April, obviously we're going to see a whole lot more money coming in through the property tax receipts. Carl and I have met earlier this week, and now that I'm past the April 15th deadline, this kind of goes back to why, you know, bringing in somebody that doesn't deal with taxes would probably be good for all for the agency. But so Carl and I had a pretty good meeting this week where we discussed, we went through the budget, we've gone through you know, how we developed the budget, where we're getting these numbers from, and then looking at areas where, as we're getting ready to do the financial statements, and as we look at, you know, what are we going to developing or getting to the point of doing a amended budget for this year, for 2019, we're going to be looking closer at, we both realize we need to look a little closer at what the, if there's any restriction, or what restrictions are tied in with the funds that have come in from ACH, or if there's any commitments that we need to be aware of, and what's the best use of those funds, and then also making sure that Jerry did a really great job with getting this GEMT money coming in, as well as the ACH money. I mean, those have been the huge aspect for our financial stability here, but we want to make sure that we can keep that rolling, and that we're all on the right page between what is required on the agency side, and also what's you know, what is our billing company doing in terms with GEMT. So that's something we're going to be working on here in the next few weeks. In addition to, of course, getting the financial statements ready for the submission, which will be due at the end of next month. We'll be working with Pam on that. I don't know if there was any specific expenditures that really stood out there. Well, we had some, the big cost for this month compared to previous months is we had $38,500 that was paid out to the county dispatch services. And that is, $38,500. That's generally a one-time-a-year thing. And then there was $13,500 of legal fees that were paid. I didn't go into the details on those. I don't know. Some of that, I think, was reimbursing. Is some of that going back to the hospital district? I couldn't remember. I can't remember off the top of my head, or if that was straight out of our side.
Half of some of your expenses were reimbursing us for the audit expense, because we paid the full yeah. bill, and then EMS turns around and does half of that.
Yeah, I understand that. Okay. This was the legal fees.
Legal fees. We get a couple of different invoices, one for the CID, one for general things, and we go through and pick out which ones were attributed to EMS and which ones attributed to the district.
They were IRS last month, just due to the DOH investigations related to Chief Martin, and I saw that was a jump.
Yes.
But it should even out.
Yes.
And your expenses should level off, since you've had big expenses at the beginning of the year.
So the rest of that should be pretty. Everything else has been fairly consistent and pretty much in line with our budgets. I don't really have a whole lot more to add on this. If anybody has any questions, happy to answer them.
All right, we'll move on then to more of the operations side of the house. To let you know that within the community, Randy Bolt, our Director of Public Outreach, has been involved with 12 different classes going on in the month of March, CPR, first aid. I think there was also some classes involving wilderness first responders. 133 people were reached in our community, including people from the public library and students from Spring Street International School, which was really very, very exciting. As far as the local for our paramedics, there's nothing to report there. In our normal monthly operations fatigue assessments, there were no fatigue assessments filed. There was no naloxone use by individual EMT, volunteer EMT, first responders, though I believe there was one call that naloxone was administered by a paramedic and titrated just to see if there was any effect on a suspected overdose. Our 24-hour shifting is proceeding according to plans. We have one full-time EMT responding and available here at the station 24/7, along with our paramedics who shift for 24 hours and they're responding 24/7 as well. As far as our medical protocols, the BLS protocols have been approved by the state. They have been distributed to the EMTs, signed for as to receipt, and I believe our last meeting, we're asking that our individual EMTs have signed a statement that says that they've reviewed those BLS protocols. The plan is to get those up onto the website for use by the EMTs, and eventually we've been working through the County Trauma Council to try to get those an app set up so that protocols can be downloaded onto a mobile device and you can search through those. And that should be happening. As far as the ALS protocols, I know Nick Price, who's been charged with that on the county level, has been working with the paramedics to try to get the list of medications formalized. I was unable to attend the last County Trauma Council meeting, so I'm not sure exactly where we are in that process, but I know they have not yet been approved. So we're still waiting on ALS protocols. In terms of our water rescue and marine response training, we've actually tried to implement a program where we're not just dealing with those trainings by ourselves, but in coordinating with Fire District 3 and the Sheriff's Office. We've had two joint trainings with Fire District 3 and Captain Long, who runs that program over there. The emphasis of those two trainings were patient transport and man overboard drills. And our Marine officer, who is our Reserve Lieutenant Katie English, is working with Captain Long and Under Sheriff Zach Reimer to help develop that program. Our plan is once we've got our house in order and we're working well together here on San Juan Island to move over and include joint trainings with ORCAS, their MRAP program, Marine Rescue, and I can't remember what the acronym stands for. Yeah, something in transport is in there somewhere. To get coordinate response with them and also to help develop a set of protocols for our dispatchers so that they know who to tone out depending on where those calls are located. Our 2019 EMT class, there are 10 students, nine of whom will be here on San Juan Island. One is at ORCAS Island Responder. They just completed, during the month of March, Mitch Schlosser, who is a Cape resident and a retired Seattle paramedic and a former Navy SEAL, did a guest lecture for barotrauma and dive-related injuries, which people found very, very good, and we opened that up to our regular EMTs as well. So what's remaining for them is the final group assessments. They've all passed their individual skills stations. They've all passed their medical assessment, individual medical assessment, and their individual trauma assessment. So now we're down to the wire. Class is expected to finish the 11th of May. So I'm looking forward to some really good folks joining our ranks. There has been talk within the county about a radio upgrade for the county, and that's the CODAN proposal. CODAN is a group that puts together these things. We've been talking with the chiefs amongst the county and listening to their proposals. The idea behind this CODAN proposal is that we would get better coverage by using the fiber network that Rock Island is building and has worked with T-Mobile. Right now, the Sheriff's Office and Public Works uses a single tower up on the top of Mount Constitution to relay all their information, whereas here with San Juan Island EMS, we use a repeater up on Hillview Terrace to try to get information out to all across the island. the proposals that CODAN is coming up with and using this fiber optic network and the small micro towers, putting their radio signal repeaters on those, shows coverage for the island dramatically increasing. Really, the only dead spot that they're showing is Dead Man's Bay. Appropriate, I guess. But they're thinking that we're trying to put all this together. Right now, the big looming questions are, how do we coordinate the service amongst the fire and emergency medical services, along with Public Works and along with the Sheriff's Office, to provide for the safety of our providers, to make sure that we have coverage all across the islands. And we're working out details as far as, right now they're looking at sharing costs, one-third with the Sheriff's Office, one-third with Public Works, and one-third with the combined county fire and EMS. The fact that we're exploring the integration process is also very helpful, because then we don't have to build separate radio facilities for San Juan Island EMS and San Juan Island Fire. We can put the two together. We're also looking at options of countywide channels being open and then moving to a tactical channel for dealing with an individual scene. More work will be coming on that, and I will make sure to keep you all updated on that. Also want to report that the helipad committee has met, and we discussed that a little bit in the working session, and I am hoping that Commissioner Schwinge can talk more to that during the committee's report section of our agenda. Another note is that our administrative assistant, Caitlin Johnson, is going to be leaving at the end of this month. I know Chief Martin presented that at the last meeting. We got a week left, but we have found someone to replace her, and she's in attendance. Diane Karlshagen has been hired on as our administrative assistant, and she is like day two into the process and doing her darndest to assimilate it all and doing a very, very good job with it. Thank you, Diane, for joining us.
Very happy to be here.
It was a strong field of candidates. We had six candidates that applied for the position. I was pleasantly surprised at the number of people who were willing to work with us, and obviously Diane was our choice, and here she is. I've got a section here about staff training. We had two ongoing training and education sessions for our EMTs during the month of March, one of which was burn reviews with Dr. Haislu. There was a very frank discussion about medical ethics that was well received and well attended. Dr. Haislip was also able to facilitate the ALS training with the paramedics on the 26th of March. That went well. Caitlin and I were able to attend a BARS accounting training put on by the Washington State Auditor's Office that helped us understand what was going on with that particular system of accounting, understanding what the codes were. And I think we managed to take in most of that and at least now have a better understanding of where that's all generated and how those auditors are looking for the reports. There was also a FEMA training that both Director Volk and I attended over on Orcas Island. It was entitled Access and Functional Needs Preparedness Planning for Rural Communities. And basically what that means is we were looking at vulnerable populations, people with mobility issues, people that are relying on medical oxygen, people that are relying on power to run devices that they're linked to, and how do you prepare to help those people in any sort of crisis situation, power outage, earthquake, anything like that. And so we were able to attend that. That was put on by our County Department of Emergency Management. Our community paramedicine program is we're continuing to work with our partners in the Snohomish County area, and things are moving well ahead. Laney and I were able to attend a meeting in Everett with those folks. We're working with our reporting with the Accountable Communities of Health, and we're also trying to coordinate with our local health department, which is going to be working with Orcas Island as they develop theirs. What's happened is we're kind of running on convergent paths. Orcas Island and our local health department is working through one accounting program, working toward the final end. We're coming in with our partners over on the mainland, who'd been doing this for several years and were able to kind of help bring us under their wing and move forward, but we're working on converging pathways. And so Lainey and I have been dealing with Mark Tompkins and Scott Williams over at Orcas Fire and Rescue to help coordinate those things and make sure that we're providing for our community all the way across the board. I have our information about our supervising physician, Dr. Haysluk, who is continuing to serve and has led ALS training for the month of March. She's scheduled to, she was here yesterday for our training there, and there was a slight glitch in the scheduling. She won't be here in May, but we'll be back in June. So we'll miss her for 1 month, but hopefully we'll pick up the slack that way. And the last bit that I have here is that our EMS Fire Integration Committee is meeting. We have four of the five members nailed down, Chief Norton Collins from Fire, myself, Commissioner Cardinale from Fire District 3, Duncan Wilson will be the town representative, and then one of you. And that will round out the committee. I have a report that we'll be talking about later on in the agenda, and some things that we'll deal with on how we move forward. And that pretty well sums up my operation. Do you have any questions for me?
There's a consideration that was brought to my attention earlier today, Carl, about Reed's new guidelines for maintaining employment, although that's the old title. It's a document that currently reads requirements for maintaining EMT certification with San Juan Island EMS with a revision date of April 24th, 2019. And it's my understanding that you would like the board to address that. I'd like the proper motion that we address it formally and accept it. I've compared the 2019 version versus the
second.
Yes.
I'll second.
Yeah. Very good.
You can discuss.
Yeah, well, I have to say, you know, for discussion. So, sorry, I jumped the gun. Just excitement overwhelmed me. But I did notice that in the more recent version that you got rid of that proviso that didn't allow people 69 years of age or older to participate. And I really took that personally, and I thank you for that.
Absolutely. Some of our strongest providers are over 69 years old.
And what's your pay scale?
Well, it's $20 per call.
Oh, that's better than what I get as a commissioner. Very good. So, you actually made good changes. They weren't numerous, but I think they were excellent. And other comments?
No, I like the changes that you made. I looked at the red line copy. They just made it clearer. I had a question to you about, because you require everybody to have a current, obviously, driver's license and liability insurance. And my question to you was, how do you keep track of that? And you're going to be keeping track of that on an annual basis, so that makes perfect sense.
Right.
That's the only question I had.
Yeah, basically what we're finding is as we're going through our policies that some of them are still need revision, they're out of date. As our volunteers and our officers bring up questions and need clarification, we're reviewing the specific policies that those questions and concerns address. And if we're finding that they need revision, trying to do that. And stay on top of it, and along with an overall revamp. So you'll probably see quite a big chunk of them coming down the line to review and approve these policy changes.
Oh, but
we thought we'd try to do as they came forward to address them individually, rather than waiting and just throwing a lump of a match up.
Any comments, Warren?
I like this. I have one question I don't expect an answer for right now. If one of these folks develops a disability during their employment, now the ADA comes in, and if they're part-time and volunteer, does the ADA really apply to them that we have to make, there's a term of art, a fair adjustment or something like that. There's a term of art that the law has in it. I'm just wondering if we don't have to look at it from that point of view. You know, people over 69 have disabilities, like hearing.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct.
Whatever, that means me.
I don't have an answer for you right now. I'll have to do some research into
that. Yeah, I just, when I read this, I just thought, I don't want us to not address that issue, because this is an employment issue, and there are specific federal rules, the American Disabilities Act.
Right, and my understanding is that with our kind of unique status as being termed a volunteer, the other term is a part-time employee, there's some wiggle room and some gray area.
Right,
and
so but that's the problem, is there's gray areas.
We've got to get that nailed down.
Who's pressing the button that day?
Absolutely.
The area would come black or white.
I'll try to get the answer for you.
Thank you.
Any other comments? Call for a vote. All in favor say aye.
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 With that proviso then.
Yeah, of course. And that's an aye from you?
That was an aye.
Very good. Yeah, passes unanimously.
In fact, both ayes.
But your hearing is diminished.
I'm just trying to stay focused.
So is mine.
Can I have one more request from Carl? Can you find out where the ALS protocols are and how long it will take to get them out? We're like months into it now.
Just so the public knows, we have ALS protocols. This is the revision.
Okay, next agenda item is audience participation. Anyone would like to speak? Sharon Cavisto.
When you select a delegate, which I realize is you're going to do next, when you select a delegate, which I know you're going to do further on the agenda, is the delegate going to be in favor of having those meetings open to the public?
Well, I think that basically is open to the boards. The boards have already reviewed that, and the latest recommendation is that the vast majority be open to the public. And Bob, is your board formally?
Yes, it's the, when it comes to sensitive subjects, say for example, on the operations going to work or something like that, if there's personnel or persons involved, those would be up to other than the staff to take a look at that to see if that, because those would be an operational side of things, how it's going to work operational. But the rest of the means are going to be open.
And there's actually a document, Carl, that I believe is coming up later tonight, is it not, sir?
Yes, I prepared kind of a report that both Chief Collins and I and Nathan have worked on to kind of lay out the guidelines, some of the broad brushstrokes for what the steering committee looks like. That particular report was presented to Fire District 3. You're seeing basically the same report with some of the same suggestions for provisos to make that steering committee work.
So assuming that that's passed tonight by the PhD board, Sharon, like I said, the vast majority will be open to the public. Only hypersensitive, as Commissioner Jarman said, will be behind closed doors. Richard?
I have a separate comment, but I'd like to respond to that. I don't understand how a steering committee that has no decision-making authority can refuse to have all of their meetings open to the public. Steering committee shouldn't be talking about personnel by name. I mean, that shouldn't be happening, frankly. That's the province of either of the commissions. So I don't understand. I think that any occasion where the decision is made that it shouldn't be open to the public will be illegitimate, because the steering committee can't discuss anything, or they shouldn't be discussing things that would be subject to those restrictions. It just makes no sense.
Well, they're basically a steering committee. They're a fact-finding organization
that
is advisor, much like the CAG, to the respective boards in the town of Friday Harbor.
And all of their meetings
are part and parcel of doing that homework are discussing serious matters, interfacing with paramedic unions, things of that sort, that cannot be aired in a public session. Matter of fact, when we had a year and a half's worth of union negotiations, it was always behind closed doors. That's an analogous
union
point.
Negotiations are a separate item covered by law. They're not going to be doing union negotiations.
I didn't say they were. I'm just saying that there are certain sensitive matters, as described by Commissioner Jarman, that should be behind closed doors. Now, ultimately, it's up to this board to say yay or nay. Fire 3 has ruled in that regard, as described by Commissioner Jarman.
I believe, I believe that's in the guidelines that we passed for the steering committees, in the scope of the steering committee. That's what we put out in the scope of the steering committee, that they don't discuss those things anyway. It's not in their scope to discuss that. So that's why I mentioned it here, because in ours that we passed, we stated what the committee is to go looking for, how the steering committees to operate. Those other things, the operational things and that sort of stuff, is outside of their purview, staffing and that sort of thing.
And that's
Does that make
down.
Sense?
Carl will be delivering that soon.
Yeah, I'll leave it to Carl. He's got the paperwork.
Very good.
So I'm totally confused by what you just said. If they're not going to discuss those issues, would any of the meetings be private? Closed to the public?
When we passed on ours, we've already passed ours. I'm not sure what the hospital board's going to pass, Sharon. So in ours, we've set guidelines of what we want to see the steering committee do, and those subjects are outside of the scope of it. So that's why I said what I did say, because on our side of it,
okay,
we specified it.
Okay.
So, Carl, am I, in the context of this public back and forth, am I misunderstanding that?
I believe what our intention was is, as these meetings progressed, we may find it prudent to discuss a job position or something that gets down to the nitty-gritty and the operational part in trying to develop some of these recommendations that we'll bring back to these boards. And I believe the intention was to be able to allow those discussions to occur freely. And if we felt that we needed to explore down a particular pathway, some of the things that we talked about were, if we get advice from legal counsel, if we get discussions about tax rates, if we have discussions about unions or employees thereof, that in the process of this planning, that we should do that in confidence to protect that if patient information came up as we're discussing delivery of care for EMS, that we would have that ability to discuss that in a more private setting, bring back the results of those discussions into the public setting. And so we were trying to be able to create an instrument that would allow us to discuss everything freely. Well, discuss everything in terms of the steering committee and the parts that would need to be protected, could be protected, and we would then bring back the results of those discussions back up to the public.
I don't want to take up a lot of your time, but can I just make one comment that you guys already have a really tough row to hoe with this merger or whatever, and you're just making it so much harder on yourself by not just saying the meetings are open. Because then people are going to wonder what, I mean, I understand what you're saying, but if you don't make them open, you're just making it harder.
Absolutely, and the idea behind that is that those meetings would be open. If we came across those discussions, we would explain that we're going to be looking at this, so this particular part of that discussion would not be open. We'll come back to it. And again, it's more of a contingency than anything else, but the intention is that the vast majority of our work is going to be done without the open.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
And the criteria of referral into a protected conversation would follow the executive session rules?
For the most part, I mean, we're not necessarily bound by the Open Public Meetings Act.
I understand.
So, but we're trying to emulate.
You're not legally bound, but what I'm hearing out of the audience is ethically.
Pretty much, and that's exactly it. It would be, we're trying to emulate those same kinds of qualities without being a legally subject to those things.
So would those meetings then be ad hoc, or would they have to be posted?
That's a good question, and I think that's part of what those first few meetings with the steering committee is going to try to address and figure out.
And those discussions will be public?
Yes, absolutely.
And with Nathan himself, too, Nathan, as far as protocol procedures and all that.
And that discussion that you have about protectives will come back to us to be voted on as to whether we agree.
If there's anything that comes out of it that's actionable, then yes.
Richard.
I'd also like to comment on your upcoming discussion on appointment to the steering committee. Based on past performance, I fully expect that the majority of you will appoint Commissioner Smith to be the representative, but I'd like to give you three reasons why I think that's a bad decision and inappropriate. The first is that Commissioner Lindstrom is the only commissioner who you can be assured will be here beyond next year. And if the steering committee actually adheres to the roadmap that was laid out by the CAG, this is likely to take more than a year. Secondly, Commissioner Lindstrom was elected by the voters. Commissioner Smith never has been. And finally, I would say, I don't personally believe that Commissioner Smith can be trusted to be a fair and objective reporter of what goes on in those meetings back to this commission or the public. And as evidence of that, I would refer you back to the minutes and the tape recordings of, I think it was called the Continuing Education Committee, that was dealing primarily with the issues surrounding the former chief. If you listen to those tapes, as I and several other people did, and then read the minutes, you almost feel like you're looking at two different meetings, that there were glaring omissions of parts of those discussions, I suspect because they were unflattering to the former.
Your time's up, Richard. You said your point, sir.
It's
any
not,
other
it's
comments?
Not a time to attack people.
I would like to point out
finished.
Your
finished.
Own policies next. And procedures next. Say you don't respond to public comment or criticize it.
It also says we don't have to have it and we can stop it.
And we did. I did as chair. So next.